Lance. Last call for Lance.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Last call for Lance. Last call for Lance. Last call for Lance.
Let's see, Rocky Mountain, rainbow trout, sautéed in butter. La-da-dee-dee-dee-dee, la-da-da-da. Grilled Pacific Coast fish, lamb chops, that's not bad. Let's see, Spanish omelet. I see they have turtle soup today. I can have my choice of a cup or a tureen. A cold salmon plate from the state of Washington. Lemon mayonnaise, toasted roll. There's a chicken sandwich. Well, I get that back on 6th Avenue. Club sandwich, clubhouse sandwich. Ham salad, tuna salad sandwich, double-deck bacon and tomato sandwich. Listen to this. This is nice. Barbecued spring chicken done in the Wyoming fashion. French fried potatoes, coleslaw. Grilled Salisbury steak, fluffy Spanish omelet, French fried shrimp. Let's see, chef's salad bowl, combination of crisp hearts of lettuce, ripe tomatoes, radishes, and other spring vegetables served thoroughly chilled with shredded baked ham and chicken tossed together with the Union Pacific chef's own special salad dressing. And then at the bottom it says, of course, there's a lot of other things. For example, there's freshly baked pies, blueberry, cherry, strawberry, rhubarb, with aged cheese, cheddar, or a la mode in homemade ice cream. That's the way they... this is a luncheon menu that I'm reading. I'm sitting in the observation dome of the dining car on the city of Los Angeles. And we have just passed through Fort Steele, Wyoming. And I'm looking out on the Wyoming countryside with the beautiful, fluffy white clouds and the elegant table, linen, silverware, glassware. And I'm wondering why in the world we're doing away with this way of life. It just really doesn't make much sense. But it's such a great way of life. And the menu that I just read reads at the top, it says Dome Liner, City of Los Angeles. And down at the bottom, it says for collectors, demi-tasse cup and saucer sets, an exclusive Union Pacific pattern, may be purchased on the train or ordered by mail. They have a beautiful special Union Pacific glassware that has the big UP shield. And the outside of the menu is a picture of the Yellowstone National Park in Wyoming, which isn't too far from here, Riverside Geyser. And we are now passing through a country which is really the heart of the West. This is the West West. I ever since I was a little kid, even the word Wyoming has a romantic sound to it. I don't know why. I mean, this is very personal. Wyoming is a more personal sound, or at least a more romantic personal sound to me than any of the other places in the West. You can say Colorado, Utah, those are all West, but somehow Wyoming, it's just got a sound to it. And I, from the time I was a little kid, I always wanted to go visit Wyoming, and here I am. Personally, I think Wyoming is the most beautiful state of the Union, at least the most beautiful one that I've seen. The train is now going through a cut, and on each side of the train, these cliffs, sheer cliffs, rise. Great pink, gray, kind of yellow rock with sagebrush. And it's what a beautiful cliff that is. Look at the cliff. The cliff high up, there's a bird flying high above us. These cliffs that we're going through here. It's a kind of a cut right through a hill. When they first built the Union Pacific, obviously they cut right through this area. It must have been a fantastic engineering job in the early days of building the railroad. And you can see that you won't get any picture of that. It'll be very disappointing. One of the hardest things in the world to take a picture of is a cliff. It tends to flatten out in a picture and looks like just a line. But the cliffs are towering above us now. I'd say, a good 300 feet. Tremendous cliffs. Straight up. And these cliffs, this area, because we're right on the overland trail that was used by the early settlers, or at least one. This was one of the trails that was used by the settlers. And when they got into this country, it was kind of a landmark. It's getting a little drier now. You see, as we go further west, you can see the brown, just a slight brown, is beginning to show through. And this used to be tremendous buffalo country here, where we're traveling now. And if you didn't hear last night's show, I'll give you a clue that I'm aboard the City of Los Angeles on one of its very last runs, this great train which many, many people have traveled on over the past, one of the great historic transcontinental trains that built America, will be no more. This week, the last run will be made. And before that was going to happen, I kind of made a personal resolution to myself that I was going to ride this train. It's the second time I've ridden it, and I even enjoy it more this time than I did the first. The scenery is just never-ending, just goes on and on outside these broad windows. This beautiful air-conditioned train. Look, there goes some kind of a western bird running through the sagebrush off to the side of the train here. The thing, of course, you can go on and rhapsodize about train travel, which most people will never really experience in their lifetimes. You know, it's hard to believe that in just a few years, if you say to somebody that you traveled on a transcontinental train across the country, they're going to think you're some ancient old codger. It's like saying, you know, I came west on a stagecoach. There must have been a time when people couldn't even have, you know, thought that there would be a day when there wouldn't be stagecoaches going across the country. They had this very involved stage system. And here it is now. We're arriving at the end of another great era, which was, of course, the railroad era, when people would travel from town to town and across the country on these beautiful trains. This train is, what they used to call a streamliner. It's very, very aerodynamically designed, beautiful colors, the Union Pacific color, sort of an orange train trimmed with black. And when it crawls across this vast plain, look at the tremendous cliff. It's hard to tell. Of course, hard to judge distances here in the West, because the air is so clear and sharp that everything seems a lot closer than it really is. But there's a tremendous cliff, looks like about a mile away from us here, that just marches right along the parallel to the train. Tremendous cliff. I would say that cliff must be a good 600-700 feet high, easily, and almost sheer. And off beyond the cliffs, you can see rolling hills going off to the horizon. We've been passing through antelope. There are a lot of antelope in this area, and that's something that you don't really see much when you drive across the country, because antelope, wild game, tends to stay away from turnpikes for obvious reasons. And of course, the train is nowhere near the turnpike. It's very isolated all by itself out here in the great prairies. And apparently the antelope have no fear of the train, and we've just been passing through herds of them that just sort of look at us and move on. Yesterday, the show, if you heard yesterday's show, we were just coming into Cheyenne. Well, this show is being recorded on the leg of the transcontinental trip between Cheyenne and Ogden, Utah. We're on our way to Ogden. And the reason that I'm doing this is that we're filming, or actually taping, with very modern tape cameras and so forth, in beautiful color. There's a tough-looking railroad man, a hard, grizzled-looking man, just standing here all by himself, watching us go by, with his hands on his elbow, just on his hips, just watching us, and wearing those blue overalls and a big engineer's cap. You know, it's funny, when you get out here in the West, the costuming is of course Western, very railroad-oriented too, and none of these people wear these costumes for camp purposes. So the guys you see wearing the faded blue overalls around here are wearing faded blue overalls because that's what they've always worn all their lives. And they look like men who were born to wear faded blue overalls. Also, you notice walking around the streets of Cheyenne and Rollins. By the way, we're just coming into Rollins now. Rollins is a few miles ahead. You see these big straw 10-gallon hats. Guys with Western shirts open to the waist, practically, wearing jeans. And they're not doing it because they think they're hip or anything. That's their clothing. I mean, they wear it with as much authority as the average Madison Avenue executive wears his Abercrombie and Fitch weekend sport jacket. I mean, that's his costume. Now here's a river right below me, and this river looks right out of a John Wayne movie. You can just see... it's one of these flat, brown, western rivers, beautiful river, and winding through the cottonwood trees off into the hills. And it's the kind of river you can just see John Ford photographing with a big, wide screen lens. And off in the distance, you see big John Wayne with his crowd plunging over the ford, belting their horses across the sandbars. It's just got that feeling to it. But the thing that I'm always impressed by seeing the West here is how many people, and it's kind of tragic too in a way, and I guess in the sense it can't be helped because of the kind of people we are, but how many people who live up and down the Eastern Seaboard who year after year religiously take their European vacation. They hop on the plane and they go to Paris or they go to Rome or they go to London, who have never seen this country, never even thought of seeing it. And I just don't know how to answer a thing like that. This is some of the most magnificent country in the world. In fact, I'll give you kind of an insight into what this country means to the rest of the world. In many parts of the world, in fact, I heard this in India. I've heard people say this to me in Rome. I remember specifically one night in Paris, a guy talking to me about this, that there are people all over the world who would give anything to see the West. You see, they've seen Western movies. They've seen these movies everywhere. No matter where you go in the world, they've seen Westerns. And the country so intrigues them. I'm not talking about the cowboys. I'm talking about the country, just the actual land. So intrigues them that they would love to come out here and see this. And many of them feel that they'll never, ever get a chance to do it. And yet here we are. We're only comparatively a few hours from this fantastic landscape. And very few people that I know actually come out to see it. It's something that if I had ever mount a campaign, any kind of a campaign, it would be a kind of population exchange. I think that a great government project, and it could solve a lot of the communication problems in our country, would be if you were to round up all the citizens of Wyoming, and that there aren't many. In case you're curious, there are only 300,000 people living in the entire state, that there are more herds, there are more deer in Wyoming than there are people. This is an actual statistic. And, of course, this is a big game state. And there is more big game, more heads of big game, by far, than there are people living in the state. Well, I would like to see a system where you could take 600,000, let's say take 300,000 people from Wyoming, and somehow bring them back into Just put them on trains or put them on planes and sentence them to 2 weeks in New York. I mean, you know, it's part of your education. So for 2 weeks, they live on Sixth Avenue. And, I mean, ride in... And I don't mean take them on sightseeing trips. I mean, they have to live in New York, just like they're living there, you see. And, you know, I mean, they get in an argument with guys in a cab, and they fistfight their way aboard the double E train, and they have to stand in line to get the mustard at Nathan's and all that stuff. You know, the whole New York routine. And then when they got back to Wyoming, they would have a little more of an understanding what is meant by the urban blight and by the problems of the urban life. On the other hand, I would like to take the entire island, the entire borough of Queens, and move it out to Wyoming and keep it out here for 2 weeks. I can imagine the average Bayside resident. Hey, Ma, what is that up there? She says, I don't know. It looks like the sky. Look at, what is that? The sky is falling on me. Speaking of a falling sky, this is WOR in friendly, good old, where never a discouraging word is heard, New York.
Tijuana Smalls, it's something new, baby, for you, baby, you know who you are. It's a little cigar. Tijuana Smalls, things that you do, baby, that's you, baby, you know who you are. It's a little cigar. Slim and mild, tobacco that aged like wine. Slim and mild, and you know who you are.
New Tijuana Smalls. You don't have to inhale them to like them. For you, maybe, you know who you are.
You know who you are. It's a little seagull.
Poverty, ignorance, pain, hunger, sadness, loss of self-respect, disease, false idols, hate. These are the reasons why people fight. These are also the reasons why the Peace Corps is in Ghana and India and Colombia and 49 other countries. The job of a Peace Corps volunteer is to give people a chance to develop dignity. To give people a chance to know they can do a job well. To give people a chance to be proud. To give people a chance at a better life. In short, to give people a chance. This is how the Peace Corps works for peace. Would you like to work for peace? You may be qualified. Write the Peace Corps in Washington for an application.
This is Joanne Woodward. If you think some land should be left undisturbed by man, if you feel that clouds should not have to contend for space with smog, that a spring should be able to run free and pure, that a wilderness river should be left alive. If you feel any of these things, help the Sierra Club save the last beautiful parts of America. The Sierra Club, Mills Tower, San Francisco.
I'm sitting in the observation car. Well, actually, this is the dining, one of the dining cars. What do they call this car?
The Dome Lounge. It's Dome Diner.
This is the Dome Diner. Thank you, Roscoe. And we're sitting up here, whipping along. We just left Rollins, Wyoming, which is a real western town. They tell me that this is a town where men genuinely are men, and they usually wind up in the maximum security prison back at a hill there, right?
Right on the
edge of town. And we're way out in the country here. We just passed Rollins, and the train is really getting underway now. And it's between meals, and I thought I'd sit here and chew the fat with Roscoe and Bill and Don, who are in charge of this car. How long you been with the road, Roscoe?
18 years.
Does it seem like it?
Oh, it slipped by.
How do you like riding the trains?
I like riding the train. Lots of fun. Hard work at times, but it's lots of fun.
Well, do you when you guys ride back and forth across the country like this, do you get so that you know practically every inch of it?
Well, we become very familiar with it in different towns, things that have interested us, we remember. each man would remember something else about the trip that is of interest to him.
What kind of people do you meet here on the trains these days?
You name it, we got it.
Some are good, some are bad, some are in between, huh?
Yeah. So whatever you... Oh, we meet real good people, you know. Some have problems, we have to listen to them. They come in and we console them. And some come in and they just the opposite. So you name it, we got them. That's the best I can explain it.
Bill, when did you start here on the road?
Oh, I started in 1942.
Let's see, 1942, that was the first year of the war.
Yes, it was. So that gives me about 28 years altogether.
You carry many troops in those days?
Oh, and out. Nothing else. First year I worked over here was nothing but troops.
What were troop trains like, actually? I mean...
Most recruits going to army bases, and then we had some returnees, and then once in a while I'd get a trip on a civilian train, you know, that had civilians and a military.
Well, how was the train? I mean, did they eat well on them?
Well, they eat well as long as the food lasted. See, in those days everything was rationed, and it created quite a problem. We served only two meals to the civilians, whereas we had to serve the soldiers three meals.
Yeah.
So it was always a problem of running out of food.
Well, you actually broke in then on troop trains?
Yes, I did.
Well, now, I've heard a lot of people say that that just before the war was the heyday of the the big railroad trains going cross country. And did you get in on any of that?
No, I didn't. I mean, when I got here, the war had been in progress about 12 months, so I got in during the beginning of the war real good.
Where do you live now?
Los Angeles.
Is that where you lived when you started?
Yes. I'm really from Texas, and I moved to Los Angeles. Been out there ever since,
yeah.
Except for a little military duty myself.
Do you like riding? Do you like this work, this life?
Well, yes. I mean, since I've been doing it so long, till it's just become a part of me, I guess. So when we get home, we stay a certain number of days, and then within ourselves, we know when it's time to go again.
You get the itch, or do you figure that it's time?
No, not the idea of getting the itch. It's just time. You know what I mean? You just a cycle. You know, just. You realize it's just time.
You know, it's funny. I get a feeling of traveling on the train here. You guys must have a sense that time just goes on and on. You must have a funny time sense, like you go season after season.
That's right. That's what it comes out to be, just about.
It's something like being a sailor.
Well, I've never been one.
Well, you know what I mean.
Sure.
You guys see weather, and you see the country all the time, and... do you look upon non-railroad men as civilians?
Well, now, that is a good question. Yes, I suppose so.
In other words, you guys are special people.
Yes.
Well, I've heard it said, Don, maybe you can add something here. I've heard it said that once the railroad bug bites you, you can't really do anything else and be happy at it.
Well, I'll say this much. When I first started railroading, on my layover, if I'd hear a freight and hear a train whistle, I'd get itchy feet ready to go. But in the latter years, you know, it's dimmed a little bit because things have changed quite a bit, you know.
When did you start on the road?
In 1946.
Uh-huh. Lady wants to buy a candy bar. We're making a recording, lady. It's in the next car. Okay, it's all right.
Well, when it's like, when I started was on troop trains mostly, you know, and we'd get out here, sometimes we'd be gone 10, 12 days, you know. We'd take a load here and drop them, pick up another load, go another direction. You never knew when you're going to get home, so.
What does your family think of this type of life? I mean, you know, you guys are gone for days on end. How long are you gone at a single trip before you get home?
5 days.
You live on the train?
Yes. With the exception of laying over in Chicago for 24 hours.
I see.
And then when we come back, we're home. 7 nights, you know, six nights. It depends on the run you're on. And your family gets adjusted to it. They become aware that you're a professional hobo, and that's it, you know.
You're on the road. Did they ever ask you about this? Did they ever want to travel with you?
Well, I tell you, when I had my children were smaller, I had problems. Some years ago, in 1948 to be exact, it snowed in Pasadena. And I just came out of a snowbound train, and they woke me up to see the snow. And I...
Daddy'd seen plenty of snow. Hey, you know, that reminds me. What kind of weather do they get out here in Wyoming in the wintertime when you guys are traveling this
ride?
It's
very, very cold and miserable out through here. In fact, it hadn't been a month ago we had snow on the ground out here coming across.
You mean right?
Yeah.
And here it is.
In August, July.
August, July, and just a month ago. Now, when will the snow come down here again?
Oh, it's September, and it'll be...
And then it stays.
Then it stays. Well, you don't get too awfully much snow when it's up high. You get too cold to snow too awfully much, you know.
You ever seen a... have you ever been involved yourself in a train wreck?
Oh, yes. Thank goodness, none real serious, you know. Just had a few shake-ups here and there.
Yeah.
But you learn to live with them, you know.
Yeah.
You shake it for a trip or two, and then it's all over again.
Well, you know, there's so much talk of doing away with the railroads, that is, doing away with passenger service on this great transcontinental run. How do you feel about that? I mean,
I think it's a real tragedy. Yeah. I think it's terrible. There's so many people that like to travel by rail, and they won't have it any other way. And if they discontinue the trains, it's going to work a hard shit on a ship on a good lot of people, see?
No. It's a different way of life. You know, I've noticed that there's two kinds of people. There's the kind of guy that wants to get from one place to the other absolutely instantaneously, and then there's the other kind who enjoys the traveling.
Right. Well, to give you a perfect example of what you're saying, doing in the winter times when some of the planes get grounded up in Wyoming and up in those up in that area.
Yeah.
They're a different breed when they get on here, because they get on here mad. They blame us for having to be set down, you know.
Yeah.
This, that, and the other. It's just, well, it's...
They're a different breed. They're not your people.
All together. There's quite a difference. And there's just no satisfied, it seems, you know.
They're unhappy people.
They're very unhappy when they get on board and they look like you just can't do anything about it. You can't break the spell. You
That's know? A very interesting point. In fact, I was talking to one of the people with the crew, you know, that we're filming with, and he said that... he had never traveled cross country, and he said the first 6 hours on the train, he said he felt very restless, all wound up, you see. He didn't know what to do, and he said all of a sudden he realized that he had to learn how to relax, really learn how to do it.
But, you know, it's an art to ride in a train, just like it's an art to work on a train. And it takes a little bit of effort to be a good passenger, because there will come a time you may have a hot car, or you may be something on there that you think you should have that they don't have aboard. You have to learn to live with these things.
Do you guys have great train men? In other words, are there any train men in your world that are considered great train men? Like Mickey Mantle is a great ball player. Incidentally, which one of you grew up with? You grew up with Jackie Robinson, didn't you, Roscoe?
Yes, I grew up with Jackie Robinson.
Where was that?
Pasadena, California.
Went to school with him.
I went to school, Sunday school, and all other schools.
Some schools you don't talk about.
Yeah, we were real good friends. In fact, we started in kindergarten and went all the way through to the... I went 1 year in junior college, and he went on to where...
Did you ever play any ball yourself?
Oh, a little bit. Most of mine was all sandlot, you know, just for kicks and something to have the hoorah all about at the end of the game, you know. But we had, very impressive, we had quite a few teams, championship teams, that during the summertime that they couldn't find no one to beat us, you know, and everything. But
you must play pretty good ball yourself, then. What'd you play?
No, I played right field.
Right fielder? That takes a... You know, as an old ex-ball player myself, do you, either of you guys play ball at all?
I played softball.
How about you, Bill?
Just a little.
Well, then you'd know that a right fielder is a special type. A right fielder is usually, in, when kids choose up, the last guy is the right fielder. Right, Roscoe?
That's right. That's why I play right field.
I mean, the right fielder, he's the guy that either owns the ball or owns the bat. But, you know, Roscoe, do you ever see Jackie at all these days?
Oh, I haven't seen him in quite a while. It's been over 2 years by me living in Utah. When he comes home, I'd be in Utah and he'd be there, and then I go into L.A. on a run or something, then he's gone back home and stuff like that. It's been quite a while since we've seen each other. But Don's brother brought me a message from him the other day. He told Don's brother-in-law to tell me how long he asked about me. They were in Spain or somewhere in a golf tournament, and Jack had won, and he told Don's brother-in-law to tell me how long.
After all these years, Jackie's still winning.
Still winning.
He's got good wrist.
Oh, yeah, he's a hard loser. He's always been a hard loser. I guess that's what made him a champ.
Well, hard losers make real good winners.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he just goes on and does it. Has the road changed much since you got on it?
Oh, yeah. It has really changed. It's the passenger, the crew, the trains have taken off, and when I first started, I was on the Pacific Coast Limited. I ran from Denver to Los Angeles. Then I went up to on the Butte Special, and we ran from Ogden, Utah up to Butte, Montana. And I don't know, working a train is just like driving a taxi cab. Every trip is different.
Never boring.
Mm-mm. Every trip's different. Something happening just like today. Here you are.
Yeah, here I am. Hey, Bill, I wanted to ask you, what's the best train you ever worked on?
Well, I was...
The most elegant.
This one. This train here, this is called the Dome Liner. And when I first started, we had two or three mediocre trains. But this is the most elegant train I ever worked on. I worked on here since 1948.
This train, the city of Los Angeles?
Yes.
How many runs have you made on this trip? Well, do you go all the way out to Chicago? Or?
Yes, Los Angeles to Chicago and back to Los Angeles.
Well, you've seen this country inside and out.
Yes, I have.
You've seen houses change.
Yes, well, every trip's different, just like DeVore said, you know, no two trips alike.
Well, do you ever, when you travel across country here, do you ever get so that you know specific people on the route just by seeing them, you know, their house? And...
Oh, yes. I mean, especially this one house there as we go into Savannah. This lady's always been waving ever since I've been over here. She's
the same lady.
Same lady, I suppose. You know, sometimes we're late, but she's still there to wave.
Savannah where?
Illinois.
Savannah, Illinois?
Right at Mississippi River there.
And she waves you by every
That's
day.
Right. That's right.
You know, that's part of the, I guess, part of the whole train thing that is so different from planes. You ever ridden on a plane cross-country?
Oh, yeah. No, not cross-country. About 800 miles, the longest flight I've had.
Well, what do you think's the difference?
Time element. I mean, just like I said, only 800 miles. I was there in about an hour and a half where I went. Yeah. So, whereas 800 miles on here would take 16 to 17 hours.
That's true, but there's a sense of relaxation aboard, though, on this thing.
Oh, yes, on this, but it was no relaxation on that plane, I tell you that. Incidentally, the first flight I had was an emergency flight, so that took something out of it, too, you know.
What happened?
Well, when we left El Paso, Texas, everything was nice and clear, and so about 30 minutes later, the stewardess announced that we had lost one of the motors, that we were going to make an emergency landing at Phoenix, Arizona. And then she said, we can't make Phoenix. We're going to have to make it at Tucson. So that's one of those things. Everything
a little area.
Yeah, there's a little tension there.
Well, now, I noticed you guys serving here this morning, this afternoon. I'm really impressed with the kind of food you serve for the city of Los Angeles.
Yes.
Well, I bet most people like it, don't they?
Yes, we have more compliments than complaints, I'll put it that way. You know,
food is good.
Yes, they put the top grade of food on here.
How many chefs do you have aboard?
Well, aboard, we only carry one to a crew. I mean, one to a dining car. But near about every fellow in that kitchen has worked chef one time or another.
Yeah.
But since, you know, reduction in forces, they have to probably a second cook or a third cook.
I'll be back in a couple of minutes.
The first as-is sale in Pontiac history. On all new Y-Trax. Every 1970 Bonneville Executive and Catalina is priced to go. And everyone is factory new, equipped as is. So you can drive home a brand new Pontiac right off the floor and get the best year-end deal in Pontiac history.
There's never been a better time for moving, and you're moving up a lot.
What do you do when the music stops? Where are you then? Where are you then? When you drop full blown on all the mountain tops, where are you then, my friend? What do you see when your pupils contract? You're out in the alley after your act. You're not quite whole, the straight world's intact. Then, my friend,
you may think drugs are the answer to all the things you may think are wrong with the world, but with that answer, nothing changes except you. And if too many of you choose that answer, where are we then, my friend?
Where are we then?
The preceding was brought to you by the National Institute of Mental Health.
Trains have always had a curious, very disquero pull on people's imagination. Do you recall when they used to have a radio show on the air that used to begin with the sound of a train coming into Grand Central Station? Did you ever hear of a radio show about, it was called Grand Central Station, the show itself, the crossroad of a thousand lives, Grand Central Station. You can hear this train. It says it's now passing 125th Street as it roars through the great canyons of the city, and this train is roaring in. Well, trains have always had a curious pull on people's imagination. Now, so have aircraft, but in a very different way. Aircraft, I don't think, to most people, in spite of all the commercials, to most people, do not represent travel. I think they represent flight, which is not necessarily the same. Flight is an exciting experience, but travel is something else. The train, no matter what you do to it, remains a train. It is a very interesting phenomenon, the train. And I predict, for what it's worth, that by the year 1995, let's see, this is 1970, I would say probably the year 2000 will go even further than that. The train will have had a full-blown renaissance as a means of travel. Do you agree with that? First of all, it's the most civilized form of traveling I've ever done in my life. It is unbelievably civilized. And if you're looking for anything civilizing and civilized, I would suggest that you get out there as fast as you can, because within the next year or so, all the great transcontinental trains that we have known in our lifetime will disappear. They will have a renaissance, I'm predicting, by the year 2000, but it's going to be a long hiatus between. Because I think people are becoming more and more interested in the country. And there's no way to see the country better than on a train, I can assure you. If you think it's a car, forget it. I've been driving cross-country in cars for years, and there is no experience like a train. And I just found it all out again.